Please join me in the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. Tonight, our 40-minute speaker is Rick from Oceanside.
Thank you. My name is Rick. I'm an alcoholic. And it's great to be up here tonight. You know, I this really reminds me of places where I used to go to meetings when I was new in sobriety. And so I kind of like that. It has sort of a fond feeling about it. You know, I got sober in Orange County and went to meetings frequently early on in Anaheim and in Garden Grove and over at Orange Olive. And so all up and down Orange County, I kind of did that. Primarily, I got sober in the Garden Grove area, and I went to meetings there frequently. And that was a long time ago. It was when they had the older club. It was just a two-story building out in a big parking lot. I don't know if any of you remember that or are familiar with it. I'm going to tell you right away that I'm not really a circuit speaker, so I hope you didn't come to be entertained tonight. I've got a story just like everybody else here. And every once in a while, somebody just says, you know, you're in a barrel, you know. And some of it's funny, some of it's sad. I try not to embellish it too much, you know, because there's people here that know me and they call me on that shit, you know, after a while. But I've had, you know, I've known a couple of these guys here for 20, 25 years. Like, how old are you? You're almost 30 years sober. I got sober when I was a mere child. And I was real fortunate. I don't want to get too involved in drunk logs, but I'll probably get into some of that. And, you know, if you don't like it, you can throw something at me or whatever. Just, but it's part of my story. I got sober in 1973, and I'm continuously sober over 36 years. And, you know, that doesn't mean much to any of you guys, but it means a lot to me. And where I go to meetings a lot now at the Alana Club in Oceanside, some of you have probably been there, they're fond of saying, you know, whoever's got the most sobriety is the first one up in the morning. So I try and be up about 4 o'clock in the morning anyway, too. But at any rate, I'm very grateful for that period of continuous sobriety, believe me. And I try not to take it for granted. But I think it's very important for me to tell you a little bit about how I got here, and not to dwell on it too much, but I certainly didn't get here on a run or a winning streak. It was a result of a bunch of drunk drivings. That's probably not unlike some of you guys, you know. And the first few times, it was so long ago, the first few times the fines weren't real big, you know. I was able to pay those things off, and I think the first 2 or 3 times they never even made me go to AA, you know. Pay a fine and that was it. And as it happened several more times, they eventually came to me and said, well, you know, you're what we call a repeat offender. I didn't like the sound of that, but and I wasn't a criminal for crying out loud. I just liked to drink. And I would get drunk. I'd get in the car and get drunk, and I would never have enough sense to give up my car keys to somebody, you know. I know that bartenders now are responsible, and they don't let people, patrons, be too big of an alcoholic or too big of a nuisance, but they didn't care back then, you know. They were just, you know, if you had some money and you wanted a drink, you got it pretty much. And I sought out those kind of places. The places that I drank at were really kind of, you know, hole-in-the-wall places and peanut shells on the floor. And it was really kind of funny. I remember at the height of my drinking career, let's get some of this stuff off out of the way. The height of my drinking career, I was living in Newport Beach down by 20th Street. There's a series of buildings there. It's right on the beach. And there's a place there called the Stag. It's actually still there, I believe. It's called. It was a bar, and I think they had a Chinese restaurant there at the time as well, and a liquor store, a packaged liquor store. And up above the top, it was a second story building. Up above the top, they had rooms that they used to use as brothels, you know. And so I lived in this brothel. I was lucky enough to know an alcoholic who lived there and was moving on up the ladder. So I got in line to get this room. Now, these really were brothel rooms. They had a washing sink in there, but they didn't have it. You had to walk down the hallway to go to the urinal and take a shower. But I don't want to age myself. I'm proud of this. It would cost me $12.50 a week. I thought I was living high on the hog. And no girls, though, you know. But it was cheap rent, and it was... I would drink at every one of those bars in that corner. There was Sid's Blue Beat. There was a place called Oliver's. I happened to be working down the street at a place called Hank's Fish House Place. So I was slinging hash and cooking fried fish. And it was just a great time. I thought I was having a great time. And I was... I'll tell you one other story about this. I don't really get too involved. I used to drink across the street at a place called The Place. It was a beer bar, and it had a picture of a... Remember Mr. Natch? You know, the guy's trucking down, the keep on trucking guy? He had it all over this pool hall. So anyway, I used to drink there all the time. And one time I was drunk. This was before I lived at the Stag. I lived in some nicer places down there in Newport, actually. And... I had a 59 or 57 Plymouth, and I had a, this is a long time ago, and I had a Pontiac convertible, and I had an MGB, and none of these cars are worth more than about $50, you know. And I had them all down there on the peninsula, and there's no parking place there, you know. You have to find some place to park them. So I'm parking them in places that have to be moved every 3 days and things like that. Well, one night I got so drunk, and one of my stories is, and this is the truth, ever since I had my first drink, I'm a blackout drinker. I drink, and I have a few, and then it doesn't seem to concern me to remember, you know, the next day. I don't know why that happens so frequently, but I blacked out almost every time I drank. And this one night, I'm trying to give a guy... I was trying to give a friend a ride home, and he had this big St. Bernard dog, and he lived down at the end of the peninsula. So I'm taking Bernie home and his dog, Bernie was about my size, you know, and his dog was almost as big as us, and we're in this little MGB, and so we get tooling around just drunk as anything, and the only one sober was a dog. And I'm trying to get him home. And those cars, those old cars, were famous for having terrible electric circuits, you know. And so it just goes out, you know. The lights went out in it, and the ignition went off, and we pushed that off to the side of the road. And so those guys, I think they went on back down to where they lived by themselves. And I went back up the road, and I had told them I would get another car and pick them up later. So I got yet another car. I got the Pontiac, I believe, and I went down the road, and it ran out of gas. You know, you don't have any money, you know. I went back and got the other car, and I lost. Anyway, if you go on to Newport Peninsula, it's one road on and one road off. You can't get lost. You just straight in and straight out. And I lost three freaking cars that night, you know. I mean, I should get some kind of a medal for crying out loud. Anyway, so, you know, I was just dodging the cops, and I was drinking a lot down there, and I was accumulating these 502s. You get 502s. Sometimes they would catch me before I got into the car, and that was called a reckless driving, you know. Once you're behind the wheel, it's called a 502, or driving while intoxicated. At any rate, they decided that I needed to get sober. They told me that I needed to get sober, and they said, we have something for you. it would be the forerunner of SB 38 at this time. And I don't know how long, some of you guys look like you've been here for a while, or you might have heard of this before. Orange County had a new thing that they were studying at that time. They were trying to teach alcoholics to educate them not to drink. They think if they give them some knowledge about alcohol, they'd have enough sense to stay away from it, which is... You guys probably know there's you know, that's not easy to do. They introduced me to what they call the Lucky Deuce program. Deuce being 502, and the Lucky being, you know, you don't have to go to jail, you know. You get into the Lucky Deuce program, get yourself to where you get tested all the time. And it was an 18-month class or course, and I had to go to two Lucky Deuce meetings every week and two or three Alcoholics Anonymous meetings every week, be having a urine test whenever they wanted to, a breathalyzer test whenever they wanted to, not get into any trouble at all. And I thought, what an order, shit, you know, this is bullshit. I thought I was going to be here for 2 weeks, you know, and I've signed up already for a, seemed like a 3-year tour, you know. Anyway, I still had this plan in the back of my head that this is a bad rap. I'm just going to get a good lawyer, and I'll be here about 2 weeks and get a lawyer, and he'll bail me out once again. Well, it just didn't happen that way. I ended up going to my first Lucky Deuce meeting. I can remember this. This is how alcoholic I am. I don't know whether... I used to drink at a place called the Branding Iron in I think it was Garden Grove or Anaheim. And I was a regular there. I'd be there, spend a lot of money every night. And I worked for them at one of their other package stores. And so I was just a regular there. And when I had to go to AA or Lucky Deuce the first time, I went to get my last drink. I thought it was going to be the last drink for the evening or something, you know. And I remember the barmaid, she was a regular there. I mean, she was a regular barmaid. And I remember the drink. I remember it was bourbon and water. And I had a couple of double bourbon and waters. And she comes back and says, well, you want another? I said, no, I got to go someplace. And I told her the story about having to get busted and we're going to be not drinking for a few weeks. And, you know... That's history, you know. I that was my last drink, and if I had known that, I probably would have stayed there for, you know, a few more days, for crying out loud. So I go to the daggone Lucky Deuce meeting, and to show you how controversial it was back then, this guy was a lawyer who started it, and they had a guy there who had been coming to meetings and he had been drinking, you know, and they really didn't want this thing to fail, so they frowned on that. And this guy was being rambunctious, kind of, you know, getting a little testy. They threw his ass out of the meeting. So the first meeting I go to, some guy's getting in a row and they're throwing him out, you know. I'm thinking, what the hell is this? You know, are we in Texas or something or what? And didn't know what I was getting into. And didn't think I was going to stay for more than a couple of weeks. And I'm here to tell you that through... a lot of luck, because it hasn't been, you know, my work in an exemplary program. It hasn't been because I've been so good at being sober. I've been lucky, and I have been I go to a lot of meetings. And I think that what happened to me was, we talk about having a bottom in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I certainly had that. You know, I was bludgeoned. I had a half a dozen 502s. I'll tell you what my bottom really was. I didn't mind so much getting arrested by the cops, and I wasn't a criminal. So what they do back then is they put you in jail for 4 hours, you know. They let you sober up. They see whether you were a transient or something. If they figured you had a job or a driver's license, you had an address, and they'd let you go. I mean, you had to be really bad to pull a long stretch there. So... they let me go, you know, a half a dozen times after a 4-hour stay. But the point that I want to make to you is that 4 hours was killing me. You know, I'd wake up in a cold concrete floor and wouldn't know what I had done because of the blackouts. You know, I didn't know whether I hit anybody, hit a deer, you know, and offended somebody's wife. And who knows, you know. And so... and they wouldn't tell you. You'd knock on a door, scream in a cell door. You know, they don't like that. And They let me know that after a while. I learned to be quiet after a while. But first few times, I'm thinking, I can get their attention. I can get them to let me go. And I felt like a caged animal. And something in me knew that it wasn't going to be forever. But that feeling got kind of lost after you do it a few times, you know. If you do something and it's wrong and you pay a penalty for it, fine, don't do it again. You do it again and again and again, that's what Alcoholics Anonymous calls a subtle insanity, you know. The insanity of the first drink, you know. The insanity of, I'm going to do it again and this time it's going to be different. I can beat it this time. And I suffered from that all the time. I mean, I'm thinking, I can drink. And I used to do all these half measures. I'd go down to the bar and I'd drink soda until about 10 o'clock. So I can't get very drunk in 2 or 3 hours. Well, I could, you know. Or I'd wait until the last half hour. I'd have to drink real fast to get drunk then. And I had no control over my drinking. And I had no control at all over what it was going to do to me. I'd drink and it would be like going into... what's that nursery rhyme thing where Alice in Wonderland, you go through some sort of a portal or something and you don't know what's going to happen. And somehow I didn't mind that. I knew that I was going to... What used to happen to me when I'd get drunk is I'd get so intoxicated that I could talk with people at ease. Talking's never been my long suit, even when I was drinking. But when I was drunk, at least, I could be glib with people and pretend to think that I was humorous, and you know, it just didn't bother me. I like to call it, I had a broken give a shitter. I did a few drinks and I have a broken give a shitter, and I was pretty much happy wherever I was. I had enough to drink, little stash at home, and we're ready to go. So what would happen to me, they'd put me in this cage for a few hours, and man, 10 minutes seemed like an eternity. So that was my bottom. I said, I will do anything not to come here again. And if it means going to these stupid meetings and whatever, I'll try it, you know. And so they made me come to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I really was against it. I had the second step was really difficult for me. You know the one that says, restores to sanity? It's got a two-part kind of a thing. God wouldn't, could have sought, where I didn't have too much of a problem with the God thing, but somehow I didn't think I was insane. And I just got through telling you this subtle insanity of drinking and thinking it's going to be all right, drinking and thinking I'd know my way home, that I wasn't going to wreck the car this time. I mean, it's just crazy. Anyway, so let me kind of pull a fast forward here. That was in 1973, and I had about three years of since I'd been out of the service, and got into enough trouble for me to want to not be there anymore, not have those problems anymore. They gave me a choice. They said, you can go to Lucky Deuce and consequently go to Alcoholics Anonymous, and you may not have to go to jail after that, and we may let you keep your license. Or if you don't do that, you can go to jail right away, and it'll be for a year. And if you think your lawyer is such a hotshot, this public defender that you've got, you know, if you really want to trust that, he may get you to where you can do your time in an honor farm or something, but you're going to go away. So I liked the first option, actually. And so I came to the meetings, and I didn't think too much of the meetings. I didn't think too much of you guys. And I thought I had a chip on my shoulder. I had a chip on my shoulder. Didn't want to talk to anybody. And I don't know what changed for me in Alcoholics Anonymous. I can't tell you when it happened. I know that I was fully 6 months sober before I was able to say, you know how they ask newcomers, you say, who's an alcoholic? And you raise your hand, you've got 30 days less, say, I'm an alcoholic. I couldn't do that. I was so stupid or arrogant that I'm not saying that. I don't believe it, you know. So they'd call on me sometimes and they'd say, you know, who are you? What are you doing? Is that Sam Rick? And I didn't say I was court appointed. That's the most popular phrase now. I'm court appointed. See, I had a couple of, I had to come here because of a deuce. And anyway, So I am the most, and I drank every day, and I used recreational drugs whenever I could, so I really believe that I am such a long shot for being sober, especially a long period of sobriety, that if I can do it, you know, I mean, a lot of people can do it, you know. The concept of going a day without drinking for me was a foreign concept. It was just as much a part of my being as getting up in the morning and you know, taking a shower sometime during the day or the week, you know. And, I mean, drinking was just a natural thing. It was the only comfort I got. So, a funny thing happened to me. I got sober up in Garden Grove, and I didn't like it. And some of them didn't like me. You know, they said, oh, you're one of those court card guys. Why don't you go out and drink some more? Blah, blah, blah. But I ran into about a half a dozen guys, not four guys, actually, that ended up being close friends, and they were relatively close to me in my age. I was 26 when I got sober. These guys were maybe 3 or 4 years older than me. And so I really, I see a lot of young people in Alcoholics Anonymous now. That wasn't really the case when I got sober. And I know that they hit it pretty hard early on. These guys would take me out after the meeting, and we'd go to coffee after the meeting, you know. We'd go for conversation. We'd go to, my favorite thing was to take me to a restaurant out there called Chris and Pitts, a barbecue place. And, man, I thought I was in hog heaven then, you know. I mean, there's something to eat after the meeting, and some of the, it was, it became tolerable. Sobriety became tolerable. And then I ended up meeting some younger people and some young ladies. And they were acted like they were glad I was there, and I was glad they were there, and that kept me coming back for a while. And I'm just telling you, I ended up wanting to be sober. Now, I don't know when that's going to happen for you. There's a lot of people that come to Alcoholics Anonymous, and they unfortunately never get to that place where they really want to be sober. More than they want to be drunk. And I wish I could tell you how that happens. I know that I went to a lot of meetings. I helped them up at the club there. We put on, I used to be a cook back then, so we put on pancake breakfast and stuff, and we'd get guys helping in the kitchen, and the Al-Anons would serve the meals. And it was a lot of group type things. I've done a lot of camping in AA. I've ridden motorcycles with AA guys in one of their things. Guy in San Diego, the Easy Does It Riders. I don't think they're probably in existence anymore. But played volleyball every week. I'd be down at Buccaneer Park in Oceanside, slamming the daggone volleyball, and just, you know, making. I don't know. Going to a lot of, and I don't know how it is here, but in Oceanside and in North County down there. Everybody has a birthday, and they have what they do is a sit-in. I think it's a holdover from Clancy's group. The guy or the gal, say, is going to have a birthday on Thursday night. Well, everybody on Friday night waits till midnight, and they have a party for them at midnight. They don't care if you have to work the next day or any of that shit. You're going to go to the party. And we did a lot of that. That stuff really helped me stay sober. And so I've had a lot of friends in Alcoholics Anonymous. A lot of those kinds of group events. This last Thanksgiving, just, you know, a couple of weeks ago, I have some blood family left in the Pacific Northwest, up in Seattle area, but I don't have anybody around here. So my family, is kind of my adopted family, is the guys at the club, and so we had a big Thanksgiving thing, you know, and everybody got fat and happy, and it was great, you know. I had watching big TV at the widescreen down there. So, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous has filled a lot of gaps in my life. The thought of drinking to me anymore doesn't come to me anymore. I don't get tempted about drinking. When I was early in sobriety, I was new enough to, you know, the ones that I liked were the alcohol commercials. You get those alcohol commercials, and the ones that got to me were, I don't remember who it was now, but they had some guy on a hang glider, And he's hang gliding onto the beach. He's got a case of beer with him. And he's like the hero. And I'm thinking, wow, that's me. I could be that. I could, if I did that, I'd show him, you know, I could be the hero. And it never worked for me trying to be the hero while I was drinking, you know. It just got arrested. And I don't know. I've had a lot more fun and success in Alcoholics Anonymous than I did when I was drinking, you know. This I can't quit this early. How long do we talk? 9:20
25 minutes.
You've got to be kidding me.
Well,
yeah. Well, you know, so that was my drunkologue, you know, and I've gotten the things that I've gotten in sobriety are not something that are easy to talk about. You know, I have not been a rock at the stardom in Alcoholics Anonymous. A lot of people get money, property, and prestige, and beautiful women, and health, and just, you know. I'd like to say that's my story, but that is in no way. I get little bits of that here and there, but it's been pretty much just life. You know, I learned how to do life, and life has got its ups and downs. So if you're thinking you're going to come here and it's going to get better right away, you may be lucky. If you think it's going to get different, it's really going to get different. And fortunately for most alcoholics, they're in so much pain that anything's going to feel better, you know. Even if it doesn't get perfect, it's going to be a little bit of relief. And that's part of my story. You know, I can't promise you any of these things. I don't think anybody can promise you these things, but I can promise you that if you don't drink and you don't use and you keep coming to these silly meetings, that you're going to have automatically, even if you don't even say you're an alcoholic, you're going to get so much relief from, you know, my big thing is I'd get relief from the cops following me. Man, those red and blue lights in the middle of the night would light up the interior of my car all the time. And I'm not afraid of that anymore, you know. It talks about the problems. I'm not afraid of that anymore. Fear of economic insecurity will leave us. I'm learning how to do pineapple checks. You know what that is? That's like when you're on the dole, you know, dole pineapples. And so I've got a Social Security thing. I'm not working because of an injury. So I'm not, you know, I'd rather be working, but I'm not. And it's okay. I'm not thinking about drinking over it. But it's the fear of economic insecurity. I don't have any money, but I'm not afraid of it. I don't know how to explain that, but it's like it's not a big deal. And I've had friends, I've got a friend now that's terminal with cancer, and I see him whenever I can. I can't see him this week because he's too sick, you know. And I've had the pleasure of spending some time with him the last few weeks. Not a lot of time, because he can't be with people a lot of time. He'll come in and out, his wife will be there, and we'll have some time. We'll go out. He still wants to smoke. We go out in the patio, and he smokes, and I watch and talk to him. But this guy's been great. This guy's been great. It really has. And I've seen other people do that for people in Alcoholics Anonymous. My sponsor is a big circuit speaker, and he's watched a couple of his babies fall out that way, and he's been right there with them. You know, he's been there as a comfort to help them go through some sort of a transition like that. What I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous is I need people. I didn't want to ever need people, for crying out loud, you know. Couldn't trust them. The women would go away with somebody else, or the jobs would go away to somebody else. And I had this, I called it my John Wayne syndrome. I got to be tough, and I got to be able to do it all myself, and I don't want to need anybody. And the greatest thing that I've found in Alcoholics Anonymous is that I do need people. And I needed them all along. I was just too stupid to know it, you know. There's a great freedom that happens when you allow yourself to ask for help, you know. It's tremendous, actually. It really is. And I wish I could tell you something that if you're struggling with Alcoholics Anonymous, it would be like a secret mantra that you could just offer up and keep you sober for another 24 hours. And I don't know what that is. I know that the only way that I can continue to have the blessings of sobriety is if I don't go back and drink again. And I'm not a very smart guy. It took me about 8 years to go through 2 years of junior college. And I have to keep things simple. But I heard this in Alcoholics Anonymous. You don't drink, you can't get drunk. I mean, how simple is that? You don't drink, you can't get drunk. And I was smart enough to know that all those times that I got arrested, I was under the influence. It wasn't any accident, you know. They never came and got me when I wasn't drunk, you know. And so even I could realize I had a drinking problem, I had a drug problem. I've been in other, somebody was talking about it earlier, other AA programs. I was involved in OA for a long period of time, and obviously I've recovered from bulimia. And I used to go to NA meetings, and I found that myself, even though I qualify for that, Alcoholics Anonymous seems to work well for me. You know, I don't have to worry about conflicting sobriety dates and things like that. And I wish you well in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's a proven fact that Alcoholics Anonymous is the best recovery system for alcohol, for crying out loud. You know, you can go to one of these 30-day spin drives, spend a lot of money, $15,000, $20,000, maybe the first time your insurance will pay for it, maybe a loved one will pay for it the second time. All they're going to do is kick you out after 30 days and tell you to get a big book and go to AA. I mean, go to the Mecca first, you know, go to the hot spot. This shit really works. And if I say nothing to you that means anything to you tonight, I hope I get the idea out that I love Alcoholics Anonymous. You need to know that I've been sober for 36 years, and I don't say this in any... what I can tell you is that I really believe that there's like at least three decades there that I would have not been above ground and moving around. Running the cars into telephone poles and concrete abutments, and not knowing... Driving always... in a blackout. I'd wake up on the freeway. I remember one time I'd wake up in Orange County on Newport Freeway, and it was all concrete where I was coming through an impasse, and the only reason I woke up was because the car was getting scraped like crazy, and I thought I was a stunt driver, you know? 3 o'clock in the morning, there's just sparks and crunchy noises, you know? Jesus. And I was all the thing I could do. I got myself out of the car and got off the highway so that they didn't know it was me in there. Came back a couple of days later, and my buddy and I, we drove it home, and that's the kind of things I get into. I always drove in a blackout. I always did things that I had no defense. When I was drinking, I had no defense. You could tell me I held up a liquor store. You could tell me I ran over a truckload of children. I would have no defense because I wouldn't know. So, I don't know how your alcoholism affects you. I don't know if you were as bad as that. I don't know if you're worse than that. But what I can tell you is that if you're tired of being sick and tired, this is a successful program. This thing is tailor-made for people who are alcoholics. You have other problems, that's fine. Bring them with you, you know. But investigate Alcoholics Anonymous. If you're in any way troubled by alcohol, this could be your saving grace. I got to tell you that this thing about the higher power. I try and do AA like it says in the book. I try and incorporate all this stuff, and I had to find a higher power. And they talked about a doorknob, and you know, wasn't brought up that way. But I had to find something other than the higher power I had when I was a kid. And today, the irony of that is it's the same thing, except that when I looked at it as a kid, there was a hellfire and brimstone guy. A guy with a big gray beard throwing thunderbolts down at you. Today, I feel like I'm in the presence, and AA gives me this, the presence of a loving God that is eternally gentle to us, you know? I know we get bumped around. I don't think he drops us on our head, but I think that we go through life, and I think we are in pain to the degree that we separate ourselves from that power. This thing's got a higher power. A lot of times it's just the people in the groups. If you stay here long enough and you make friends with these people, you're going to find that. And I hope that you do that. I hope you find long-time sobriety here. I hope you find all the things that are possible and happen with long-time sobriety. But even if you just get dry, even if you just get to where you're not being chased by the cops all the time, huh, what a blessing. You know, I don't want to go to jail every Friday night, so I'd rather drive up to San Clemente, you know. I'm not fulfilling the whole agenda because I'm out of things to say, you know. And I'm not a speaker, and thank you for calling me, but it's a great thing, and thanks, guys. I appreciate it.